Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I am joined today by a new friend, Peter. Now I really don't know how to pronounce your last name. Is it Overzet?
Yeah, you got it. First shot.
Oh, Peter Overzet. That's a cool last name. Is that like a little bit German, a little bit Swedish? What is that?
You're narrowing in on it. It's like 100% Dutch.
Dutch. All right. Yeah, that seems about right. Yeah, I got a little Dutch in me, but not a ton. Jensen's more Denmark, but
okay.
You know, it is what it is. So how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing well. I actually just earlier today, I listened to your episode that you did with Chris Wessling the other day, and I feel like I have some massive shoes to fill.
Oh, no, you already did a really good one. So first of all, I think that let's just plug your show. You have a fantastic show called the Fantasyland Podcast, where you did a great episode on Chris Wessling and his battle with cancer. Really impressive, really great stuff. I really enjoyed the production aspect that went into that. You did a really good job putting all that together. But also, you do, I checked out some of your other episodes. You do some really interesting ones where you go to these big fantasy I'm missing the word right now, conventions, and you interview people about, I listened specifically to the one about co-commissioning, and that was very interesting to me, and a few others, but that one was the one that stood out. But you do a lot of cool stuff over there, so kind of talk maybe a little bit more about that, I guess.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, that's with the Fantasyland Podcast. You know, we don't put out episodes that often just because we put a ton of production work in and they take a lot of time. You know, with the Chris Wessling episode, we talked to him for 6 or 7 months. And then, of course, everyone, his family and his friends and his coworkers and listeners. So, yeah, they end up being these big projects, but, you know, we're really proud of them and we have a great team. You know, Pat Corain's my co-producer and he does a ton of incredible work with our audio production. And then, you know, Matt Friedman over, he's with the Action Network now. He's one of our producers. And so, yeah, we have a great team. And then, yeah, we just like to explore a lot of different things. The episode you're referencing, we got to go to the FFPC, the high stakes fantasy drafts in Las Vegas, and kind of experience that as rookie high stakes drafters. And, you know, so we kind of mix, you know, sometimes we'll cover a topic, you know, we've done draft strategies like zero RB and late round quarterback, but then we've also, you know, like doing the story driven elements. And I think that's what we're gravitating to more lately, are just trying to find really interesting stories that are generally in the world of fantasy or the NFL, and then really digging in and telling those.
Yeah, for sure. So just let's kind of throw back to using that kind of Chris Wessling episode as an example. Obviously, as you were saying, it takes a ton of production work. Like, can you give me an exact amount of time that it kind of took to put the whole show together?
I can, because we did a little math on the Chris Wessling episode, because that was by far our biggest undertaking. And I think towards the end of it, the way we kind of all referred to it was as, it was basically a documentary, and it just happened to be an audio documentary instead of, you know.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. And the other person we had helping us with that episode was Pat Corain's brother, Mike Corain, a fan of around the NFL, and was familiar with our work on Fantasyland. So he was kind of a logical fit to help us sift through it. But to give you a concrete number, we estimated that collectively it was over 500 hours.
Wow. Yeah. That is, so like months, that must have been like 8 or 9. Was this like a year-long project?
Not quite. We started interviewing Chris and he put us in contact with people in November. And so we were collecting audio for November, December, January, and then we did a couple more with Chris leading up to the pod, but then it was all about sifting through the audio. We clip up every single interview, so if we have like an hour interview with, say, Mark Sessler from that episode, we'll clip that into, say, 65 clips, and then we put all those clips in a spreadsheet and we rank those clips. Each of us goes through on like a scale of 0 being we're not going to use it, to 3 being like this is a great clip, and we rank the clips, each of us. And so then we start, and then we tag the clips. We give it a subject, like, okay, this one is talking about Tybee Island. And so then we cluster them by subject and by how well we collectively ranked it. And then that starts to give us a picture of like, okay, we could see this being in the episode, and here's where it could fit in.
Like, that sounds like so much work, but at the same time, like, I don't know if this is just me being like kind of a geek who like likes work, but like that also sounds like so much fun to just like kind of, I don't know, it would be a little bit hard for me because I don't know if this is the case with you, but I have a really hard time listening to my own voice. Like, if yeah. when I listen to like my podcast, like I use the 30-second skip button a lot, so I can just kind of skip to what other people say and see how that turned out. But like, I don't know, I feel like it was a ton of work. But did you also like I feel like I would have had a ton of fun on that. Was it like a kind of a fun thing to produce?
For sure. Yeah, no, I mean, and none of us would be doing if it wasn't fun. And I don't even like saying like labor of love, because it's like, you know, we're all doing this in our free time. You know, we didn't make a cent off of the episode, but it was just something, you know, it was a story and we really liked Chris. And yeah, we had so much fun doing it. And yeah, if we were making it about like, I don't know, the selling of New York from, you know, the Dutch, you know, like if we're making on just some random historical thing, maybe that wouldn't be as fun and as passionate about it. But when you're making it about a subject and stuff you're really interested in, and then it's really fun to see it together. And yeah, like to feel like, you know, we basically made a full-on documentary, and to always have that and know that it doesn't just get stale. You know, I think someone will be able to listen to that in, you know, 5 years, and it will hold up, which is cool to know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, it was honestly one of the best podcasts I've ever listened to. And like, it's I thanks for sharing kind of some of the behind the scenes stuff, because, and honestly, like, I'd love to hear some of the clips you didn't use. Like, I think there would be like a lot in that. So I don't know if you guys ever want to release like a Lost Clips episode.
No, you're completely right. We had we definitely have enough to do some bonus episodes. You know, there's we end up, you know, the full episode ended up being an hour and 45 minutes, and which obviously for a podcast, that's extremely long. But even then, there was, as you hinted at, there's lots of stuff we left out or kind of side tangents that we thought, because, you know, our goal, you know, someone like you or me, you know, we're huge fans of around the NFL, huge fans of Chris Wessling. So like anything from that world, we would find interesting. But our goal was like, say, one of our relatives or our mom or our dad who wasn't familiar. Right. We wanted to make an episode that they would feel compelled by. So then some of the more tangents or stuff on the side, that goes to the cutting room floor. But for super fans like us, yeah, that's a long way of saying we do hope to put out some little mini episodes, maybe when we get a chance here soon.
So where can people, not only the Chris Wessling episode, but just in general, find the Fantasyland podcast?
Yeah, the best way is just searching in your podcast app of choice, Fantasyland, and it's all one word, like Candyland, but instead of candy, fantasy. And yeah, we only have, I think it's like 13 or 14 episodes, but they're all evergreen. I can't really, we did record a live show last year, and that's a little bit more out of, or just, you know, stuck in time and place. But all the other episodes, I would say, are entirely evergreen, and you can go back and listen to those. And yeah, we put a lot of work into them, so even though they're old, please do go and check those out.
Yeah, for sure. They're worth the listen. Go check them out. So I brought you on here today because I've been doing a lot of these like kind of individual team previews, and this podcast is very football heavy, like legitimate, like storyline heavy. And I don't really get into fantasy a whole lot. Like, I enjoy playing it, but I'd never read about it or write about it or really look into it deeply. I always go into my draft and kind of go with my gut and what I know about the players, which obviously for me, like, that's a lot, but I can see why other people go out and read advice columns and stuff like that. And you host something called the Fantasyland Podcast, and even though, like you said, it's not always about like what fantasy players are great or whatever, you obviously pay a lot of attention to fantasy sports. So I thought I'd bring you on today to kind of talk about wide receivers and tight ends in fantasy this year. Are you ready for that?
Oh yeah, dude, I'm stoked. You know, the off season, you know, it's been a little long, a little slow, and now you, with training camp coming back, that also means fantasy draft season. Once we hit August, the drafts are firing. I'm already in a few, so yeah, dude, I am ready to talk fantasy. And I would say wide receivers are my favorite position in fantasy, so especially excited to discuss them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we do that, though, I did want to bring us back. We were having a conversation kind of before the pod, and maybe this doesn't fit well now, but, you know, it's a podcast is all about trial and error, in my opinion. But you were talking a little bit about how your dad was a park ranger. So I wanted you to give me your Mount Rushmore of national parks that you've visited.
Yeah, I will just make one clarification. I did tell you he worked for the National Park Service. He was actually a civil engineer, so he wasn't quite.
Oh.
He was out in the field, but he wasn't always he wasn't doing the park ranger duties. But cool. Yeah, no, I'm happy to. When I was a kid, I always was just like, why can't we go to Disneyland? Why can't we go to Disney World or go to the beach? And, you know, instead my dad was taking us on these road trips to all these national parks, and I was just kind of ungrateful about it. And now looking back and having such a greater appreciation for the national parks, I now realize what an idiot I was, and I can put it in perspective and realize how great those were. So yeah, are we going to do it draft style, or am I going to just give you my rundown?
If you want to go drafts, we can go drafts. And I would say I'm kind of like you. My parents were big like outdoorsy people. They worked for the National Forest Service while they were in college. Obviously they don't anymore, but we went out camping a lot, and I was always kind of like, man, why can't we just go see a big city? But you're definitely right, like as you get older and you like realize like these things aren't, like, especially with, not to get like too political or whatever here, especially with like our environment and the way things are changing, like these parks aren't going to be around forever, and like it, you are fortunate to like go and see them. So yeah, I like national parks as well, but I mean, if we're gonna do this draft style, I mean, we might as well do it right. So you have the first pick for sure.
All right, so I'm actually going to use a little bit of game theory here, because I know you're a Utah guy, and I feel like this park isn't necessarily my number one, but I'm going to take it just in case you take it as a homer pick, and I'm going to say Bryce Canyon National Park.
That is actually not on my Mount Rushmore. Ooh. I've been to Bryce several times, but like I get it if you go into kind of a land spires, there's some cool hiking, and it's really cool to have the contrast between the red rock and the altitude and the pine forest and things like that, but honestly that's not my number one overall pick. It probably would have made my honorable mentions, but I think number one overall for me would probably have to be Arches.
Like
that's kind of a homer pick as well, but like there's really not a bad, yeah, there's not a bad place in Arches. And like honestly my favorite place in Utah isn't a national park, it's a state park called Goblin Valley, which is also just remarkable, great slot canyons and climbing and things like that. But I'd say my favorite national park would have to be Arches.
So. Awesome. Yeah, for my second pick, I'm actually going to do one that I didn't go to as a kid and recently visited for the first time in the past few years that I absolutely loved, and that is Glacier National Park in Montana.
I very much want to go there.
Yeah, it is well worth it. It's gorgeous for sure.
Yeah, and that's one of those ones that like that could be gone in like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, for sure. I definitely want to get out to see that one. Honestly, when you threw the draft at me, like I totally like started blanking on like national parks. So let me just quickly Google national parks, Utah, because I've been to like most all of them, and some of them, like, I wouldn't really think of as national parks per se. So let me, okay, I'd say for sure that Natural Bridges, which is kind of, that's a weird kind of region area one. Natural Bridges is a great one. It's a little bit more remote, but there are some really cool, like, ancient Native American sites still kind of there. So yeah, I go with Natural Bridges. Actually, I'm going to change that because I kind of do like the Native American, like, history a lot. I'm going to go Mesa Verde as my number two pick. It's I love Mesa Verde.
That's a great one. That is a great one. I will, for my third pick, I have very fond memories of going here when I was younger, and I assume it would still hold up, but when I was a kid, seeing the massive trees at Sequoia National Park was an awesome experience. So I'm going to go Sequoia.
Yeah, never been there. Is that in California?
Yep, it's in California, kind of in the middle area in the Sierra Nevada mountains.
Yeah, definitely want to go there sometime. That's it sounds like a lot of fun. I think my third pick, and this one's a little obscure, but this is also because I like national history, is Dinosaur National Park. Right on the Utah-Colorado kind of vernal area border is really cool. I really, especially living in Utah, like, we don't have much to offer, like, touristy wise, but like as far as like science goes and like this paleontology, it's very rich here. So I really like Dinosaur a lot. I think it's a well-run park, and it's beautiful, and you get to see like some of the fossils that are still like intact, and it's really cool.
Nice. Yeah, that is an awesome park. For my last pick, I am going to fade the chalk. I think everyone's going to assume I'm going Yellowstone. Everyone's going to assume I'm going Grand Canyon. And I'm going to go with a little bit of a homer pick here, being from Colorado. I'm going to go with Rocky Mountain National Park in Estes Park, Colorado.
Gorgeous. Oh, I've driven through there. That's beautiful.
Yep. So I left you some good ones on the board, though.
I'm not going to take, I'm kind of keeping this to stuff that I've been to. Amazingly, like, the one place that I haven't been is Yellowstone. I've never been to Yellowstone. I really want to go to Yellowstone. The other place that I would put on my Mount Rushmore, because I've just seen a lot of pictures and heard a lot about it and think it's really cool and want to get there soon, I have a trip planned for like next month, is Zion National Park as well. I don't know if you've ever been there, but that's got some really nice kind of history behind it. So I'm going to go, this one's a little bit indie as well, and that would be Cedar Breaks National Park, which is kind of right above Cedar City, Utah. It's close, really, really, really close to Bryce Canyon. But it's more kind of the foresty, mountainy part of what you get from Bryce. It's a really nice landscape, beautiful wildflowers, really nice forests. So yeah, I'll go with Cedar Breaks.
I love it. My dad's done a lot of work there as well, and I love how we just teased everyone. We said we were going to do fantasy. Little did they know we were going to do a national park fantasy draft. We pulled the rug out.
Absolutely, yeah. So, but now let's talk a little bit about national park infrastructure. How do you think that's going these days? Sorry, that was canned laughter and a bad segue. But we have some fantasy to talk about. So let's start with wide receivers, and let's kind of start with a little bit of a discussion. Like I said, I'm not big into fantasy, but this year I write for a blog, and like, I like to try new things and kind of challenge myself. So I decided to kind of do a fantasy ranking. I kind of went like, I looked at like ADP, and then I was kind of like, no, this is just going to be kind of my gut. Like, there's, because that's the way I normally approach fantasy football. So I just kind of wanted to talk about kind of top 10. So let's kind of divide it into like threes. So who are your top three fantasy wide receivers this year?
Yeah, I would say I might cheat a little bit because I feel like there's kind of four guys that I would say are in a tier.
All right, yeah, let's go. Yeah, absolutely. Let's start with those four guys.
Yeah, so and you can, you know, people will definitely get more granular and have tiers within these tiers, but a general tier I think is Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Odell Beckham, and Julio Jones. I think those four guys are in a class of their own.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I have Antonio Brown number one. I don't really think it's close between him and the next guy. I think DeAndre Hopkins is kind of creeping up to him, but I'm not quite sure I want to put DeAndre Hopkins over Antonio Brown quite yet. I have Julio Jones at three and Odell Beckham at four, but yeah, not much of a difference between those. I think the next tier I'd have would be kind of the guys right under, and I'd say that's from 6 to 10 for me, which is Keenan Allen at 5 to 10, which is Michael Thomas, Keenan Allen, AJ Green, Devontae Adams, Adam Thielen, and T.Y. Hilton.
Yep, and did you have AJ Green in there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. The three I definitely overlap with: Keenan, Michael Thomas, and AJ Green. And then I get a little funky with my last three. Just because these are guys I really like. I think Doug Baldwin's going to have a huge year this year, so I have him in there.
I agree.
And then I love Thielen, but I like Diggs even more, so I go Stephon Diggs instead of Thielen, and then I go Amari Cooper. I know he didn't have a great season last year, but I think everything with Crabtree gone is setting up for him to have a monster season.
Some people are really down on Diggs, and I'm honestly not sure why. I think he's going to fit in really well with Kirk Cousins, so that's kind of a mystery to me, is kind of why people are like banging him. Like, it's not he's a good wide receiver and a quality talent. So that's kind of both of our top tens. Honestly, like, we haven't spent a whole lot of time on this, so do you want to kind of delve, do you have a little bit more than your top 10 in front of you?
I could pull some stuff up. I had also, we had talked a little bit about sleepers, and we could also talk, I don't know what's most interesting for your audience, but just, one thing I would also just pull back and say about, you know, wide receivers, it's really important to know like what your league settings are. Basically, you know, first of all, is it PPR? Are you getting points per reception? Because if you are, you know, obviously receivers and pass catching running backs get a bump. If it's a standard league, then you're obviously chasing more just touchdowns and yardage. So that changes the calculation. And then also how many receivers you can start. You know, some leagues only allow you to start two, some might give you three with a flex. So it's knowing that, and, you know, the more PPR, the more flex spots, that's where wide receivers become more and more important. So I think that's just something to think about when you're deciding between a running back and a wide receiver.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have kind of a question for you. Like, I've noticed this, and obviously this is about my third year that I've played fantasy, and I'm kind of, I guess, quote unquote, a rookie at it, but not so much anymore. But this year especially, I've been doing a few mock drafts, and like, I feel like it's really important to take running backs early this year. But I feel like if you don't take a wide receiver in like the first 2 to 3 rounds, you're going to be fine. Would you agree with that or not?
No, I agree with that. Yeah, I definitely think you can get by. And there's, you know, it's always, there's all kinds of different ways to approach the draft. You know, some people say, you know, if you pick the right players, you know, every draft strategy can work. If you draft Peyton Manning the year he throws 50 touchdowns in the first round, like, it might be a bad pick at the time, and then you realize, well, he threw 50 touchdowns. So it's tough to get too into it, but I think you definitely can get away with that strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about maybe not necessarily sleepers per se, but just kind of some guys who are in kind of the middle of your list And then we'll go a little bit deeper as far as sleepers go. Who are some like kind of mid-round sleepers and then some later sleepers? And I'll just I'll start with you. Let's kind of focus on the middle rounds, like rounds like 7 through 10. Gotcha. And then let's say it's a 15-16 round draft.
Yeah. So I actually approach, obviously, like we said, the studs at the top are the studs, and they get a ton of targets and they score touchdowns. That's no brainer. So when I'm looking in the middle rounds, one thing, and I guess it sounds kind of obvious or intuitive, but a lot of people still don't do this, is I'm targeting guys on prolific pass offenses. I want my guy to be tied to a really good quarterback. And so obviously a guy like Michael Thomas, he's long gone, but it's who is Drew Brees' second target? And you know, that year, this year, that could be Ted Ginn. Or I'm looking to the Packers, you know, I'll let someone else draft Devontae Adams because I want to draft Randall Cobb in the 9th or 10th round. So that's really my strategy when I'm looking at wide receivers in those rounds you described, is trying to find the second or third option on a really good offense with a good quarterback, because we all know that those quarterbacks don't really discriminate. They're not like Andy Dalton, who's just going to pepper AJ Green with targets because he has no other options. Guys like Rodgers is going to spread the ball around, and if Devontae Adams is covered, he's going to throw it to Cobb, you know. So that's kind of the trajectory I'm looking for in those rounds.
Yeah, absolutely. So who are, like, give me two or three guys that you look at in those rounds this year that you really like?
Yeah, so using that criteria, I would definitely say Randall Cobb is a guy I like a lot. I also like Chris Hogan a lot on the Patriots for that reason. Obviously, you still have Gronk and Edelman coming back, but then Hogan is a guy that showed really good rapport. And I think that's good. A guy that doesn't necessarily quite fit this criteria, but I do like a lot, is Paul Richardson, now on the Redskins. I thought he flashed a lot with Russell Wilson and Alex Smith. Surprisingly, people don't realize it, but he can throw the deep ball well. I think he could be a really good target. So those would be some of the guys on good offenses that I'd be trying to target. How about you?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on Richardson. Earlier in the offseason, when free agents kind of moved around, I wrote a fantasy piece about which players improved fantasy the most. And I think Paul Richardson has a really good shot to be a great wide receiver. I've taken him in a lot of my mock drafts, even like late, like 10th, 11th round. Like, he's there then. I think people underestimate him. He's got tremendous size, great speed, good hands. He doesn't really drop passes, and he's a good red zone target. So he's definitely a guy to keep an eye on. I'd say in kind of the middle rounds, a guy that might kind of fall a little bit, but honestly will be the number one receiver, I believe, as a Broncos fan, is Emmanuel Sanders. Like, people are really caught up on the Demaryius Thomas of old with Peyton Manning, but like, if you look at him statistically and his drop numbers and kind of the way his yardage has ebbed and flowed, he hasn't been an elite wide receiver since like 2015. So I think for me, we aren't talking busts quite yet, but I'd stay away from Demaryius Thomas and go more towards Emmanuel Sanders in those middle rounds. And then, of course, you've got a guy in Kelvin Benjamin in Buffalo, where he is legitimately arguably the only target there in Buffalo. And even though he's not great, especially if you're in a PPR league, in a standard league, I might stay away from him. But if you're in a PPR league, like, he's going to get a ton of targets this year.
Yep. I love both of those calls. I agree. Emmanuel Sanders is very underrated. And yeah, the number one thing, and it's for basically everything in fantasy, is opportunity, which means for wide receivers, targets. For running backs, that means carries. And yeah, Kelvin Benjamin fits that bill. I mean, who else are you going to be able to draft that late that is going to get that many targets? So just chase the targets, and the rest will work itself out.
Yeah, so let's kind of go a little bit deeper now. Who are some of your deeper kind of round, like third or fourth receiver option kind of sleepers to maybe throw on your bench and hope have a good week?
Yeah, there's definitely a few guys I like. I really like Robbie Anderson on the Jets. He had a great year last year, and you know, he was a little boom bust at times, but I mean, he was a playmaker down the field, and I think there's a lot of kind of question marks in their wide receiver core around him, but I don't see any reason he can't come back again, you know, depending on how Darnold is or whoever's at quarterback there. I think Robbie Anderson can have a great season, and I like that he gets the targets that gives him a decent floor, but then he has the big play ability, the deep speed that can help him rack up touchdowns. So I like him. A similar guy, Kenny Stills, who always has a nice season, but always seems to be unsexy for people in drafts. I think everyone always wants Devontae Parker to be a thing, but you know, there's still that question mark. Jarvis Landry's gone. There's more targets to go around. He's always showed a good rapport with Tannehill, so I like Kenny Stills again. And then another guy, if we want to get a little deeper, is Dante Moncrief. And he never lived up to the hype on the Colts. As a prospect, he was a phenomenal prospect, you know, just the prototypical size, 6'3", 220, blazing 40 time. Everything you'd want as a prospect, and he had a few big games with Luck, but he was injured, he made some bonehead mistakes, and it just never clicked. And now you go to Jacksonville, where they have a lot of like adequate wide receiver two types, Keelan Cole, Marquise Lee, D.D. Westbrook. They're all kind of like hovering there waiting for an alpha dog to emerge. And when you look at the money that they gave Dante Moncrief in free agency, they're paying him to kind of fill in and be that Allen Robinson. So I think he's a really good value late.
Yeah, I like Dante Moncrief. I just worry about him just because of Blake Bortles. And don't get me wrong, I'm a really big Blake Bortles fan, actually. I kind of defend him like a lot, but for people, like, he's not a mess at quarterback like people say he is. His interception numbers are actually pretty similar to a lot of kind of the middle of the road quarterbacks in the NFL, but he's a game manager, like, by definition. He just doesn't throw deep enough. Like, I worry about yardage and things like that. In PPR, maybe, but like in a standard league, I don't know if I go with Dante Moncrief. And then I get really worried about Robbie Anderson because of the off-field stuff, because I feel like there's a suspension coming, and I feel like if he gets suspended, the Jets aren't really going to want a part of him. And I kind of like, in the back of my head, I feel like he's not going to make the final cut.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's definitely a good point. His off-field issues, you know, he's definitely in that kind of like one more strike, you're out territory. So yeah, my analysis wasn't factoring in that variable, but when he is on the field, I feel pretty good about him being a good value.
Yeah, absolutely. I go a few other guys. I believe in Matt Nagy. So Taylor Gabriel, a guy who switched over from the Falcons to the Bears this offseason when he had Kyle Shanahan. He was a great fantasy target, really offered some good depth. And behind another good offensive mind like Nagy, I think they'll be able to figure him into the offense quite a bit. So I think Taylor Gabriel's a guy to watch. Honestly, any wide receiver on the Bears, like Allen Robinson. Like, he might not be taken, even though he's kind of a wide receiver one, he might not be taken in the first 5 to 6 rounds. So if you can snag him in the middle or late rounds, that's good. Also, any Philadelphia wide receiver, because I feel like the Philly wide receiver core is being really slept on. Nelson Agholor was awesome last year. I think people are still really caught up on his 2016 season when he struggled with drops, but he was really good last year, and so was I'm blanking on his name.
Did you say Agholor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who's the wide receiver? Oh, Alshon Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Also a guy who I don't think's getting enough love. So Both those guys might be available in the middle to kind of late rounds. So those guys are also kind of guys to go after, even though they might not be your prototypical like sleepers. I'd say one guy that I think is a prototypical sleeper is Sterling Shepard. I think it really depends on if you believe Eli's going to bounce back or not. I have very little faith in Eli, but if you think that the problem was Ben McAdoo and you believe in Pat Shurmur in turning around Eli's late career, like, I feel like if you pick up Sterling Shepard, like, obviously Odell Beckham's going to get targets, but Sterling Shepard's really the true number two receiver on that team right now.
Right. Yeah, I like that call. Yeah, everyone wants to bag on Eli, but we've seen, you know, average to, you know, subpar quarterbacks who have great weapons have great fantasy seasons. And I mean, I don't know how you can question the weapons that Eli has at his disposal this year.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's talk a little bit about busts, kind of some guys to maybe stay away from this year. Who are some of the guys that you're seeing maybe as potential busts this year?
Yeah, there's a few guys that are kind of standing out to me that I don't want to touch for various reasons. One, and I feel like this pick could bite me because he just continues to perform year after year after year, but that's Larry Fitzgerald. He's just another year older. He's going to have another most likely quarterback change to deal with midseason. You got to assume that Josh Rosen finds his way into the starting lineup. He's a technician, so they moved him into the slot and he continued to rack up catches. But I'm just, you know, we all know the cliche, father time is undefeated. I'm just really always worried. I mean, I have those seasons in my head. Like, I always think back to Andre Johnson in that year where he just fell off the cliff and, you know, he was great, and then nothing. And I'm worried about being the guy holding the bag on Larry Fitzgerald. So that's one guy I'm avoiding. Tyreek Hill is another guy that is getting drafted really high. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes can throw the deep ball, but there's still uncertainty. We haven't seen it over a full-length season like we saw with Alex Smith, so there's some uncertainty there. And then you add in the fact that they brought in Sammy Watkins, who also excels in that same area of the field that Tyreek does, so I think there could be a little bit of a target squeeze. Obviously, Tyreek is very talented and incredibly fast, but I think there are some concerns that his situation might be different. So those would be two guys that jump out for me as potential busts.
I'm going to come back with a Tyreek Hill rebuttal for you because I sort of agree with Larry Fitzgerald, although he's one of the guys where I feel like he'll beat time. But I can't really argue with the logic there. Tyreek Hill, like, yes, Patrick Mahomes is unproven, but even when, like, Alex Smith was throwing screen passes, Tyreek Hill was taking them, like, 30 yards. And like, I feel like Hill, he's versatile. He's not, like, obviously he was a deep threat last year, but the years before where people said, you know, Alex Smith can't throw the deep ball, he was still putting up numbers like running slants and crossing routes and not necessarily going for the deep ball every time. He's also extremely valuable to have if your league counts wide receiver special teams plays. Like, I just don't see him falling off. He's always produced, and, like, even if Patrick Mahomes struggles, I think he's going to do well enough yardage-wise that Tyreek Hill's a worthwhile pickup. And the other thing is, I don't buy Sammy Watkins. I didn't think he had he opened up the field for the Rams last year, but really the guys who did the work last year for the Rams were Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. And Watkins, like, I don't know. I don't buy into him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's hard to buy in, you know, what he did with the Rams, and you wonder, like, what he has to offer. But just reading, you know, and again, it's you know, off-season news, so you got to take it with a grain of salt. But it does seem like the Chiefs really want to integrate him into the offense, and at the very least want to get him some targets. So I'm mainly thinking about it purely from, like, a target squeeze perspective, because if you really back out, like, they have a great running back. They really like Kareem Hunt. Travis Kelce is, you know, top two tight end in the league. He's going to get his targets. And then you throw Sammy Watkins in there, Tyreek Hill. They even like Albert Wilson as a slot guy. So to me, I just see a lot of mouths to feed. And because of his plays are of, like you said, he can take it to the house, but those plays are also like high variance. You know, you can't count on 65-yard touchdowns every time he touches the ball. So I could just see him having a few less touchdowns, which, you know, then starts to add up when you're deciding between players as your second round pick in a fantasy draft.
Yeah, a guy where I'll say bust, but it might be a little bit surprising to you maybe, is Juju Smith-Schuster. Honestly, like, I feel like he's going to come back down a little bit. Pittsburgh always does a great job with receiving talent. They added James Washington from Oklahoma State, and if you want a really deep sleeper, like, I'd pick him up if you draft one of your players gets injured in that last week of preseason and you need someone to fill in. I'd pick up James Washington off the waivers immediately because I think he's going to have a huge year as a rookie as a wide receiver for the Steelers. I think he's going to be their biggest impact rookie. And I think that, I don't know, like, Juju Smith-Schuster was good last year, but he was also a little bit inconsistent at times. And they also have Darius Heyward-Bey and Vance McDonald at tight end. And they bought in, and Jesse James is going to be healthy again next year, which he wasn't last year. So I just feel like Juju Smith-Schuster is a product of there's just going to be too many mouths to feed in Pittsburgh next year.
Yeah, no, his value, you know, he had a great season last year, and then, you know, Martavis Bryant left. The thing that's, I agree with almost everything you said. The thing that's just scary for me to bet against is what he accomplished at his age. You know, rookies that produce like that at that age rarely bust once they have a season like that under their belt. So that's what's kind of hard for me to reconcile, is that I do think long term, I think he's going to have a great NFL career. But I think you could be right in that maybe this season is a little bump in the road. And then he maybe gets on track later in his career, but I do feel pretty strongly about him being a great player for years to come.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that he's going to be like a total bust. Like, obviously he should still be a drafted player. Just the places where people are drafting him, as I kind of pull up his ADP right now, is a little bit insane. I believe he's being drafted like within the first five rounds, I want to say, and I feel like that's just a little bit too early for him, to be quite honest with you. I don't buy drafting him as high as some people are drafting him. He's overall being drafted in 42nd, if you put that into a 10-man league, that's about the fifth round. So yeah. I just think that's a little bit too high. Like, I see him more as like a 6 to 10 round guy, like right under that top tier of kind of wide receiver ones and twos. So yeah. I don't know. I just feel like if you take him too high, you might get burned.
No, I think your analysis is completely sound, because he fits the bill of the guy I was describing earlier, where I want to draft a wide receiver two attached to a good quarterback and a good offense, but I want those guys at a discount. Like, you can get Randall Cobb and Chris Hogan 3 to 4 to 5 rounds after you get Juju, and those guys are in the same bill, you know, wide receiver two with a good quarterback. So you're paying an incredible premium for the third best option in an offense, because you all know, even passing, it's Antonio Brown first, and then it's check down to Le'Veon Bell second, and then it's whatever's left for Juju. And he can have big games, but I agree, I think you're paying a premium for him.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have made some really good points about drafting from teams that are well connected from quarterback to wide receiver and have good deep wide receiver rooms. Who are three teams for wide receiver that you would draft from overall? That, like, if you're kind of new to fantasy football, if you see this three-letter abbreviation that shows the team by this player, you should draft them, no questions.
Well, yeah, I think it's never quite that easy, but I will just right. go back again. And again, it sounds obvious and intuitive, but if you picked wide receivers on the Patriots, the Saints, and the Packers, you would do pretty well, I think.
Yeah, I think I'd throw in the Falcons. I think they're going to have a bounce back year, and the Steelers as well, just because of the depth there. Yep. Obviously, you want to go later round with those guys, but I think I'd agree. Let's switch up now kind of to tight ends, I guess. And tight ends, this might not take as long because I feel like tight end is pretty thin at this point. When I did like my rankings for tight ends, I got like 20. And I don't know. So let's kind of start with that. Obviously, let's kind of start with our top tier. I think in my top tier, there are really three guys. And that's Rob Gronkowski first, and I think he's way above the other two. And then Travis Kelce and Zach Ertz. Those are guys that you should be taking within like the first five rounds.
Yep, I completely agree with that. The only thing I might quibble with is I don't think the gap between Gronk and Kelce is massive. I do agree, though, that there is still a gap.
Yeah, absolutely. My next tier is kind of guys that you should – it's three guys. They're kind of boom or bust, but they're – this is why I said tight end seems a little thin to me, just because there are a lot of questions around it. One, Greg Olsen, because I think if he's healthy, that offense is going to tick and the offense has a great year. But at the same time, if he's slow, like, I feel like he's the cog in Carolina's offense from just a pure football analysis standpoint. I think if Greg Olsen's good, their offense is going to be good this year. I think if he struggles, the offense is going to be slow. And it's kind of the same with fantasy. He's a big boomer bust, high risk guy. Delanie Walker, if you like Marcus Mariota, I really like Marcus Mariota. You take him. Jordan Reed, Alex Smith loves his tight ends. That's why he moves up to six, but obviously he also has injury issues.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right there with you. I think that the hardest thing for doing tight end rankings is how you deal with Jordan Reed and Tyler Eifert, because if you could assume full health, obviously in reality we can't, but for rankings, if you could assume full health, I would probably have those guys, you know, fifth, sixth, like right in that tier right after Ertz. But because you can't assume that, it's like, are you going to split the difference and, like, you know, move them in between? So that's, I have a hard time with that. I do have Reed a little further down than you, just because he does seem to never be able to stay healthy. And the only other guy I would include up there that you didn't mention was Jimmy Graham. And it kind of goes back to my, you know, theory of targeting guys associated with good quarterbacks. And I just, it seems it's not a hard scenario for me to imagine Rodgers finding him in the end zone 10 times this year.
Yeah. See, this is where we're going to have our first real major disagreement. I think I have Jimmy Graham way down. I get it. He's a good red zone target, but he's lost speed. He's not the same guy off the line. People who think he's going to put up insane yardage this year are insane. He's not going to be able to stretch the field like I think a lot of people think he will. Yes, you're right. I could definitely see him catching like 10 touchdowns from Aaron Rodgers this year. But at the same time, like, you got to decide what you value. If you're in a PPR league, I'd definitely stay away from Jimmy Graham. And if you take Jimmy Graham, I'd take him in like the bottom five rounds. Because, I don't know, just for me, he's a guy that I just can't trust him coming off. Like, he hasn't been the same since his patella injury, and I just don't trust him.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, he did have – what's crazy about Graham is he had his worst year of his career last year, and yet he still had double-digit touchdowns. It's just – and now he's going to play with the best quarterback. Well, he's been fortunate to play with some good quarterbacks, Breeze and Wilson. But on the flip side, Jimmy Graham is by far the best tight end that Rodgers has ever had. And I think you made a good point. He gets pushed down more in PPR leagues. In standard leagues where you largely just care about tight ends or touchdowns from your tight end, I think he definitely gets a boost. I still don't mind him in PPR, but I think that's a good distinction to make.
Yeah, absolutely. My next kind of tier is kind of young guys. At seven, and this is really high, but I have Evan Engram, and that's just kind of a product of thinking Pat Shurmur can turn the offense around and thinking that he's really going to use the tight end to open up the middle of the field, since people are going to obviously double-team Odell Beckham and probably start double-teaming Sterling Shepard because he's a talented young receiver. Below him, I have Kyle Rudolph, and then I have Bucks second-year tight end O.J. Howard, who, like, last year, I thought he played really well. He didn't get a lot of credit or airtime just because he played for the Bucks, who really struggled. But you just go back and look at his game against the Giants last year, and he dominated when Dirk Cutter was able to get him into the open field. So I think that that might be a little bit high, but I have him there kind of at nine. And then right below him, I have Tyler Eifert, but I think I'd take him out at this point. I wrote these like way back in like April because it sounds like Eifert's going to miss a majority of training camp, and I honestly don't think he plays for like the first 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah, although I did see some positive news actually about Eifert today. I hadn't seen anything for a while, and the news that came out was that he was going to be ready for camp. So I guess we got to take that for what it's worth, but it's something to consider. I would say the only other guys that I would include in there, did you mention Kyle Rudolph?
Yes, I did. Okay. He was squeezed in between Engram and O.J. Howard.
Okay, yeah. I think Rudolph is interesting. And then I don't love him as a player, but his situation, Jack Doyle. I mean, just there's basically T.Y. Hilton and then just a bunch of nothing at wide receiver there for the Colts. And I think Jack Doyle could just have one of those seasons where, you know, if we're looking back at scoring settings, I think he could be a really good PPR guy that's just getting peppered with targets.
So who are some of your sleepers?
Yeah, so one of the things that's kind of, and this all depends on how much you're reading fantasy stuff, but there's two guys that have become very trendy sleepers, and those guys are George Kittle and Trey Burton. Trey Burton especially has just shot up draft boards. You know, everybody, you mentioned Nagy, everyone's excited about Trubisky in year two. Everyone wants that team to be this year's Rams. I think a lot of things, and Trey Burton, every time he was on the field filling in for Ertz last year on the Eagles, he looked awesome and always produced. So I get the enthusiasm. I just think his price, it just slowly keeps creeping up and up as the hype goes. So I'll dig a little bit deeper, and it's unfortunate that he was in the news for an unfortunate situation recently, but it doesn't look like he's going to get a suspension, and that's Ricky Seals-Jones on the Cardinals. You can still get him really cheap. He had a great year last year, and even if Josh Rosen takes over, we've seen repeatedly a tight end being kind of a rookie quarterback's binky, if you will, and I think he could build off of his season last year and return good value as a sleeper.
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, I think it's David Njoku, honestly, with the Browns. Tyrod Taylor, I think, is going to be a starter for a good portion of the season. Obviously, not all of it, but he really likes his tight ends. Obviously, he's kind of a mid-range passer, and I think Njoku showed some real flashes last year. I would take him as a guy who could be kind of a sleeper. And then also, if you want to go way, way deep sleeper, I think Austin Safarian Jenkins. I think a lot of people He's moving to the Jaguars. I think he's going to get a lot of targets. I thought he was really one of the best tight ends in fantasy last year, especially on the Jets, and he produced every week, and I really like what Safarian Jenkins, especially in the red zone, can produce.
I love that call, and he was going to actually be the sleeper I listed if I didn't say Ricky Seals-Jones, and a lot of it I was listening to RotoViz is doing there. They do a beat writer interview with a beat writer that covers every team leading up to the season, and they had the Jags beat writer, and forgive me, I'm forgetting his name, but he said that all the buzz at training camp is that ASJ looks really good and that he's going to be a big part of that offense. And just from a player perspective, you know, he had, you know, those rough seasons with the Bucks, never got it together. You know, it came out that he was struggling, you know, with alcohol and staying in shape. And then he really turned things around, I think, in his life. And you saw it turn around on the field for him. And I think he's now going to peak at just the right moment. So I love that call with Bortles this year.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so some busts, in your opinion, for tight ends.
Yeah, so I'm going to list a guy because I think for a bust, it has to be a guy that's, you know, going in the top 10 or so. And this was a guy you mentioned that I conspicuously didn't mention in my list, and that's Evan Engram. And I like him a lot as a prospect, as a player. I'm worried, though, that a lot of his production last year happened when Odell went out. They had, like, no running game to speak of, and Eli was just peppering Engram with targets, which was all good and well, but now all of a sudden you have Odell back, you have them drafting a running back early in the first round who's going to command targets. You obviously have Sterling Shepard there. You just have a lot of receiving options, and I'm just worried that he's going to be able to get the volume to I still think he can have a solid season. I just don't think he can be like a top six tight end, and people are drafting him around that, you know, top six range.
Right, for sure. For me, I think if I had to look at one, as far as bust goes, it's just so thin that I think you could point at anyone kind of after you get past about the top 10 tight ends and point at them as potential busts. Jimmy Graham being one of them. I think he could be a potential bust. You look at David Njoku could be a potential bust. Eric Ebron definitely could be a potential bust. Trey Burton, if the offense doesn't take off, like it's... There are a lot more questions with tight end than answers, I feel like.
For sure. Yeah, and tight end's a tricky position because even, you know, other than those, like, top three guys we talked about, you can't really guarantee a ton of volume for these guys. Even Greg Olsen, who I agree with you, I like a lot. Even a guy like him, they're pretty touchdown dependent. If they don't have a touchdown, you're going to have a rough week at tight end. So that's why I kind of like to, if I don't get one of those top guys, I'd rather wait in my drafts and try to get a guy like Ricky Seals-Jones, Austin Seferian-Jenkins, David Njoku, play guys off the waivers, try to chase guys who have good matchups, who are going to get a lot of targets on a week, on a given week. But it really is hard to trust a guy week in and week out that's not Gronk, Kelce, or Ertz.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, I mean, for that, I think that's all we have to talk about for tight ends and wide receivers. So I'd just like to say again, hey, thanks for coming on so much, man. And if you'd like to plug your social media, your podcast again, you do awesome stuff. We'd love to have you on again. We're planning to have you on. We're doing kind of a fantasy spectacular show where we talk about every position, about drafting strategies. We'll do kind of a mock draft. We'll have a lot of fun with it kind of in mid-August. We're planning on having you on then. But for right now, do you want to kind of plug your social media, your podcast and things, and then we can say goodnight for the evening?
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me on. This was fun. I feel like I'm getting in the fantasy football spirit here. Yeah, we mentioned Fantasyland. Would love if you check that out. My Twitter handle is @PeterOverzet, just my full name. And then, yeah, I haven't even announced this anywhere yet, but I'm going to be doing a show for 4 for 4 this year. It's going to be a video show once a week during the season. We actually just recorded a pilot episode, and it's going to be more comedic and jokes and just fun stuff under the umbrella of the NFL, fantasy football, DFS, sports betting, basically anything I want to do from a comedic standpoint. And that will be on YouTube and on 4for4's Twitter, so you guys can keep an eye out for that as well.
That's awesome to hear. Exclusively reported on the End Zone podcast.
Yeah, you broke that news.
Yeah, thank you. Breaking news. So that feels good. That's our first piece of breaking news. Congrats to us. All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot, man. To all our listeners, again, you can follow us on Twitter at End Zone Pod. You can follow me at Eric18Utah. And you should be hearing this show Wednesday, I want to say. Actually, no, that's a lie. Tuesday night, attached right after this is going to be a little training camp battles preview. So enjoy that, and we'll see you after that. Thanks.
All right. Thanks again to Peter Ozevert for coming on and talking a little bit more about fantasy running backs. Had a lot of fun with that interview. Go check out his stuff on the Fantasyland podcast. But joining us now is our good friend, for the second time, Usaid Koshal. Did I get it right this time, Usaid?
Yeah, man, nice job. You got it right this time.
All right, yep, I'm very proud of that. I'm getting better with my guest names. Always a good thing. How are you doing today, man?
Good. How have you been, Eric?
Good. This has been kind of a weird day. In Utah, we celebrate this state holiday called Pioneer Days. It's kind of a Mormon holiday. I'm not really Mormon though, so it's just kind of a nice day off. I'm having a good day off. So, but I'll be back into work tomorrow and kind of back on the grind. But happy to have you on today to talk a little something about training camps, you know.
Yeah, you know, training camp obviously is an exciting time of the year, you know, because football season's practically here. You know, every team's media outlet, I think, you know, is just always, you know, covering it. You know, you got like at least 100 reporters or something, you know, all there covering training camp, just tweeting stuff out about so-and-so player is like flashing this, you know, so-and-so's doing this. So, and then on top of that, it's always, you know, the last like week of the year without football, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Most teams have started, a lot of teams have started their training camp today. A lot of teams' vets report tomorrow. And then by the end of the week, we should be full swing with most every team in the league kind of at camp. I know that your Bears started the earliest, and they're kind of in camp right now, kind of running some practices. But I thought it'd be cool to kind of talk a little bit about NFL training camp battles as we get into kind of this training camp time of year. So let's start with your Bears, actually, and talk to me a little bit about this really fascinating battle going on kind of with wide receivers right now.
Yeah, so, you know, regarding the Bears, for our listeners, they reported training camp July 19th, you know, so the entire team is there except Roquan Smith. That's discussion for another podcast, but you know, the Bears, if you know the overhaul they got this offseason at the wide receiver position, you know, Taylor Gabriel, Anthony Miller, you know, Allen Robinson, just three of many names. And the really interesting battle that's going on right now is Anthony Miller versus Taylor Gabriel, because the Bears, they signed Taylor Gabriel, so I think it was a three-year deal, and then they traded back into the second round with the Patriots in the draft, actually draft Anthony Miller. And Miller apparently has just been going off in training camp, you know, just tossing around defensive backs and stuff, just completely like bullying them, as one Bears reporter put it, and, you know, just flying, you know, all over the field, scoring touchdowns. And that's really significant, because I think you can see Anthony Miller now, like, you know, cracking the starting lineup when the Bears open the season in Green Bay on September 9th. You know, whereas Taylor Gabriel, he was a starter on the Falcons. Yes, he played mostly in the slot, and he brings a lot of speed. But, you know, the impact that Miller has had, because he was the best wide receiver in the nation last year, statistically, at Memphis. You know, so that's a really cool battle that's going on right now. I think that one you're going to want to keep an eye on, especially if you're a diehard fantasy player, because Miller could emerge as a hidden gem, you know, that you could snag on the waiver wire later on in the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to take the side of Taylor Gabriel on this one. I think that Gabriel performed so well in Atlanta that even if Anthony Miller grabs a receiving spot, like the Bears still have a need for, I think, that kind of number two receiver. And I think Anthony Miller could become that alongside Allen Robinson. But I think that Taylor Gabriel is still going to remain the solid guy in the slot. He fit. Matt Nagy used the slot so much in Kansas City over his time there. Andy Reid's schemes rely heavily on the slot, and Nagy's from that coaching tree. So I think Taylor Gabriel will still maintain a huge role in that offense this upcoming season. But I could definitely see Anthony Miller coming on and being the second target, because I mean, I guess who else do they have other than like Kevin White maybe?
So yeah, just for depth guys, you know, obviously you got Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, Anthony Miller, that are your top three guys. After that, the pitcher does get a little cloudy. You know, they have Kevin White, they've got Josh Bellamy, and then they've got guys like Tanner Gentry, Matt Fleming, you know, a whole bunch of guys that were, oh, and Benny Fowler as well, you know, just a whole bunch of guys that were, you know, either on college rosters last year or on NFL rosters, but were, like, mostly depth pieces.
Look out for Benny Fowler, former Bronco. He showed some flashes. He's not a consistent enough to be a starter, but he's a good fourth receiver for a fourth receiver set, so I think that he could come out of training camp as a winner and kind of as the fourth guy at the top of the bottom of that depth chart. Speaking of Denver, I'm going to take one. The Denver running backs, I'm really excited to kind of see this battle unfold. I think a lot of people it's between Devontae Booker and Royce Freeman, the rookie out of Oregon. I think a lot of people underestimate Devontae Booker. He's had a good career. He's never been able to show much, but that's just because the Broncos coaching staff, for as highly as they praise him all the time, they just don't give him touches. But when he gets touches and he's consistent, he has really good games and he puts up really good numbers. He's especially good in the passing game as a passing back, and there's a lot of hype between Royce Freeman, but I think that Booker just knows the playbook better, and I'd side with Booker being the week one starting running back over Freeman. I think Freeman, I don't understand the hype about Freeman coming out of Oregon. I watched a lot of Oregon this year. He just doesn't have the mobility, I think, to be a between the tackles NFL back, which is kind of, I think, what the Broncos need this year.
Yeah, you know, I think the Broncos, they drafted Royce Freeman in the third round, you know, and even though they already had Devontae Booker, and I think the consensus or the vision, the thing that they're trying to go for here is forming like a 1-2, you know, running back duo, something similar like what the Atlanta Falcons have with Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman. And I seriously believe both can develop into that. I think that most fans are just crazy high on Royce Freeman, or as his nickname I think is Rolls Royce, all right, but they're high on Freeman because this is a guy that at Oregon in a four-year career, since he had 5,621 yards, you know, he rushed for over 1,300 yards three of his four seasons there, and then you look, he had nearly 6 yards a carry, and then 60 touchdowns over that four-year career, and then rushing touchdowns, and then he also averaged 10.3 yards per reception, you know, and I think that those numbers that he put up right there as a primary back in Mark Helfrich's offense are why so many people are so high on him.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's your next group of who's your next position battle to really watch this offseason?
You know, I think that fans, you really gotta be looking at the quarterback situation that the Buffalo Bills have going on, and I think that that's gonna be an intriguing thing to follow all throughout the year. And why? Because you've got Nathan Peterman, who they drafted last year, and remember, he in his, I think his first start last year, he had like four interceptions in the first half, and then they signed AJ McCarron to a 2-year deal worth about $10 million. But then they actually traded up to draft quarterback Josh Allen from Wyoming. And the thing with Buffalo is this, is those three guys, you know, all of them have a combined 5 starts between them in the NFL.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I think that that is an extra fascinating battle. I think that, honestly, I think this will surprise a lot of people, but I think Peterman emerges as kind of the number one guy going into the preseason. I think he knows the offense. I think AJ McCarron's unproven. I think people really like him, but I think he's going to be found out pretty quickly as just kind of a less than average, high quality backup. And Josh Allen doesn't seem like he's ready to start week one. So I think that Peterman kind of comes out and week one of a preseason becomes the starter. Who do you think's the week one preseason
You know,
starter?
I think they're definitely going with Nathan Peterman here, like you said. The reason being, this is a guy who's arguably got the most NFL experience, or, you know, just on-field experience. And I think regarding McCarron, they paid McCarron $10 million to, you know, and I think Brandon Bean and those guys, they envision him like sort of being the starter, but now that's questionable. There have been reports of Peterman in OTAs and minicamp, you know, being the team that's really, or being the guy that's really like wowed everyone per se. But I think another thing people have to look at is this, is if things start getting bad in Buffalo, you know, which I don't know how the Bills season is gonna go, I'm telling you guys right now. But if they do, then I think that you'll see Josh Allen end up starting at some point in the season. And the reality being is this, is the Bills, they decide as a front office and franchise to trade up for Josh Allen. So they're going to have to start him at some point in the year. And I think that Peterman starts the first half of the year, and then you see Allen start like, you know, week 10 onwards or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Another fascinating QB battle to keep an eye on, I think, is Baltimore's between Lamar Jackson, RG3, Joe Flacco. First of all, I want to say I don't think RG3 has any chance of winning a starting job, but it'll be interesting to see how he stacks up on the depth chart, whether he's the backup or the third string guy. I do think that if Lamar Jackson really impresses and plays well in the preseason, that he has a very real chance to be the Ravens week one starter, because I think Joe Flacco is really holding this team back at this point. And if you go with Jackson, it just opens up your offense so much more. And then behind that offense is, I think, one of the most talented defenses in the AFC. So I think if Lamar Jackson lights up training camp, lights up the preseason, I think he's the week one starter. But I'd still put my money on Joe Flacco to come out being the week one starter. I think the depth chart ends up finishing as Flacco, Lamar Jackson, RG3.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the fact that they have 3 quarterbacks on the roster and Flacco, RG3, and Lamar Jackson. And I think that, you know, the Ravens, Joe Flacco, he just looked like off last year, you know? Sort of, you feel the guy's like 33 or 34 years old. He's had a great career this far. But, you know, they, you know, Ozzie Newsome, he's going in his last season as general manager. And now Eric DeCosta is set to take over in 2019, you know? And I think that Jackson is obviously the quarterback of the future for this team. But I think at some point, we're going to see Jackson start because the thing is, you know, DeCosta is going to want his guys to play. And I think that Flacco just, you know, doesn't have that, like, wow level, you know, or that, like, wow factor to him anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there have also been reports of Jackson apparently, because I was watching NFL Network the other day, and I heard someone say that the Jackson has really come out and is really like really far ahead of the learning curve, you know, in the sense that he's already beginning to he like lit practice OTAs and minicamp up and stuff.
Absolutely. So who's the next group you want to kind of focus on?
So, you know, we've talked about the AFC for 3 straight teams, guys. Let's transition over to the NFC North now, where, you know, we're going to be talking about the Green Bay Packers. Another really cool training camp battle you're going to want to keep your eye on is the cornerback trio that they have in Green Bay between Josh Jackson, Kevin King, and Jaire Alexander. Now, that's so interesting to me because the Packers, they moved on from Demaryius Randle this offseason, and everyone was like kind of freaking out. A lot of Green Bay fans I talked to were like, oh my God, you know, because when Randle was healthy, the guy was the number one corner. But then they drafted Kevin King last year in the second round. And then they added this year in the first round, they added Jaire Alexander, and they got an absolute steal in the second round with Josh Jackson, a guy who's graded as a day one player. But he just slipped to the second round.
Yeah, I think that Kevin King honestly has the upside there. I think he's gonna stay their number one cornerback because as much as people like to trash on the Green Bay defense, when he was healthy last year, King was the best receiver. What? Pardon me. The best corner on the roster. He's a great tackler. He's a great coverage corner. I think that he's definitely gonna be the number one guy. I think the more fascinating battle to watch is between Tremont Moore, I believe.
Tremont
I
Williams.
Tremont Williams, yes, exactly. Tremont Williams and Jaire Alexander. Because I think that those two are going to be the guys who are pairing up to be the number two corner on that defense. I think Williams, again, he struggled with injuries as well last year. But he played relatively well. But if Alexander plays really well, I would not be shocked to see him take the second role. And I think I'd have to lean with Jaire Alexander because throughout the draft process, I only heard good things about him. And he kind of, I watched a little bit of tape on him, and he kind of became one of my more favorite cornerbacks in the draft.
Yeah, you know, I was high on Alexander going into the draft season, the entire draft process. He was actually my number two cornerback behind Ohio State's Denzel Ward, or now Cleveland Brown Denzel Ward. But anyway, you know, Alexander, this is a guy that's going to bring speed. He's arguably, I think, the best man cover corner in the draft. It's just his problem is his few years at Louisville. You know, I was watching a game versus Syracuse, and I watched that game at least two or three times just to get a real good idea of the type of guy that Alexander was. And if you're a Green Bay fan, you're listening to this, one thing you're going to be wary of with Alexander is sometimes he tends to get a little too over aggressive, and then the receiver just ends up like beating him out. You know, you can get away with that stuff in college, but obviously in NFL, where you got grown man wide receivers running at you like Brandon Cooks, you know, like Julio Jones, you know, you're going to get eaten alive in that context.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move back to the Ravens really quick and talk quickly about their receiving core because one of the under the radar moves this offseason, I think, is how much the Ravens receiving core improved from last year. They added Michael Crabtree, they added John Brown, they obviously have Rashad Perriman, and they added, not to mention, they added Willie Snead, the former Saints wide receiver, who when he's healthy, he's really good. So I think there's a lot of open competition there as to where each of those guys end up lining up. I think Rashad Perriman and Willie Snead especially are going to be the two guys competing for the slot, and the guy that loses that battle is going to not get a whole lot of playing time. I think Snead wins that battle and ends up being a week one starter for them. But they have just a lot of interesting moving pieces, especially in the receiving core, that have to kind of battle it out this training camp.
Right. You know, that's like you said, the Ravens, they had one of the most I'd say like tw
Lackluster.
right, lackluster is the word I'm looking for. Lackluster, wide receiving cores in the league last year. And that's obviously what contributed to Joe Flacco like not playing at the level that I think he wanted to play at, or just the offense not performing how they envision. But, like you said, yeah, they added John Brown, they added Michael Crabtree, and they signed Willie Snead as well. And I think those three guys right now, in my mind, are locks to make the roster. You know, and then you look at a guy like Rashad Perriman, who was a first round pick in 2015, but unfortunately he hasn't played up to expectations so far. You know, and then you look at things now, and they got, UCLA wide receiver Jordan Lasley, who's a rookie. He could emerge as someone you know, if he's like serious about his off the field life, because that's the reason why Lasley slipped in the draft. But he could really emerge as like a nice hidden gem. You know, other guys, you know, they got like Chris Moore, Tim White, Jaleel Scott, a lot of unknowns, I think, but there's definitely tons of potential for them to care have, you know, maybe 5 or 6 wide receivers on the roster come opening day.
Yeah, absolutely. Some we didn't get to, the Arizona QB battle, although I don't think that's going to be super contentious unless Josh Rosen really performs well in the preseason. But the one I'm really interested in is the New York Jets quarterback battle, and not because of necessarily Sam Bradford. Teddy
Or you mean
Bridgewater is a guy who's.
Sam Darnold, right?
Yes, exactly. I apologize. Yes, Sam Darnold. Of course, the number 3 overall pick for the Jets, not Sam Bradford, who is currently slated as the Arizona Cardinals Week 1 starter. But that battle really interests me because I think that as much as people focus on Darnold, a lot of people have taken their focus away from Teddy Bridgewater, who before he was injured, he was going into this year of his career where people were saying, you know, he's taking the next step, and he looked really good at the end of his last healthy season. He has apparently impressed the coaching staff with the Jets. Apparently, he's by far the best quarterback in their quarterback room, is what beat writers are saying right now. I think that it would not shock me at all if, kind of under the radar, Teddy Bridgewater starts week one, or if there's an injury in training camp or someone decides they need a quarterback urgently, that he's traded before the season starts. Because I think that there's no way, unless Sam Darnold performs really well in the preseason, that Darnold starts week one. Honestly, that's kind of a way I feel with all of these rookie quarterbacks. I don't think any of them are starting week one. I think most of them will be starting by weeks 2 to 4. But I just feel like Teddy Bridgewater is an under-the-radar guy to watch who could maybe be the Jets' starting quarterback in 2018.
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna add on to what you said about the rookie quarterbacks is so if you look at the entire process leading up to the draft, the first round, we had 5 quarterbacks drafted. And I think that you know, every single team that drafted a quarterback essentially traded up because they believe that Rosen or Darnold was their guy, except the Browns, who took Baker Mayfield at 1. And you know, you mentioned these guys starting weeks 2 to 4. All these guys, you're gonna see them start at some point in the season because these GMs, these franchises, their jobs are tied to how these rookie quarterbacks perform. You know, if a rookie quarterback does great, then you're in a situation where as a GM, as a front office, you've basically saved your job. But if they end up being a dumpster fire, then you're in a lot of trouble.
Right, for sure. I totally agree with that. So I think that's it for training camp battles, man, unless you have any more that you can think of that you'd like to focus on for a second.
You know, I think I mean, those are all the ones that would come to my mind right now, at least the really noticeable ones. But you know, other teams that you guys will obviously want to keep an eye on is the Atlanta Falcons. They've got another really cool, I think, training camp battle going on between Calvin Ridley and Mohamed Sanu of who ends up being like sort of that number 2 receiver to start next to Julio Jones. And then another really cool battle, staying in the NFC South, guys, is going to be who emerges as the number 1 you know, wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers. Is it gonna be DJ Moore? Is it gonna be I think, yeah, Devin Funchess. You know, just there's a whole lot of like really interesting battles and stuff that are gonna be going on.
Absolutely. Two kind of final questions for you. Todd Gurley got a big contract today. What did you think of that?
You know, I thought that I think Gurley's so he's got 2 years left on his rookie deal, you know. So the Rams, they've locked this guy up for 6 years. He got, I think it was $45 million guaranteed. You know, that's massive chunk of change for Gurley, obviously. But he earned every single penny of it with the way that he played last year. Because he's proven, yeah, I can be in this league as an effective workhorse back. And, you know, the reality being is this is one last thing I'm going to add on for our followers, or a few things rather, is you have a whole bunch of young running backs coming up. You know, we saw how the Le'Veon Bell situation unfolded. Then we saw how, you know, I think Saquon Barkley got like $31 million guaranteed. Now you're going to see guys like Leonard, over the next 3 to 4 years, Leonard Fournette, Jordan Howard, Ezekiel Elliott, you know, all these starting running backs that, you know, David Johnson even, that are now going to end up saying, hey, Gurley got that much. If that's the price for a running back, I think that I'm worth this much, you know. And I think that the what Gurley's deal did today was essentially, one, it reset the market for running backs. But two, you're going to see running backs asking for crazy amounts of money now. And I think that they certainly deserve it, considering just 10 years ago, they were a running back. The only thing they did was run. Unless you're Adrian Peterson and LaDainian Tomlinson. But now you're basically asking these guys to pass, to catch and to run as well, you know, and be like versatile players. And in turn, all they're asking is a bit more money.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the next guy to cash in is going to be Ezekiel Elliott, mainly because I think Jerry Jones will be the most willing to pay for his kind of all-star running back that he's got. The other thing, pardon me, as I lose my just voice in general and start hacking up a lung. The other thing I wanted to kind of bring up is Julio Jones is kind of in a contract standoff. My take on that is that it's going to get pretty serious. I could see him sitting out the entire preseason if he doesn't get an extension. What are kind of your thoughts on the Jones scenario and situation right now?
You know, I don't think it's a matter of Julio getting like, Julio just absolutely wanting an extension. I think the smart thing for the, because I think he's getting like $10.5 million or something per year, and he's got like 3 years left on his current deal. I think all he's asking for is a little bit more money, because this is a guy that the Falcons, they essentially, you know, they drafted Matt Ryan in 2008 and bought on Julio 3 years later. And the thing is, Julio since then, every single year has literally been like a workhorse, you know? A guy that's basically revolutionized the wide receiver position. And Julio, I think the smart thing for the Falcons to do would be to restructure his contract, you know, in such a way where he gets a little bit more money up front, or just a little bit more guaranteed money. But I think the Falcons, you know, they're not doing that right now, because they want to emphasize like a few other players at some positions that, you know, they feel, okay, are more important than Julio.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, thank you very much for joining us. This has been a blast, and, you know, I hope we can get you back on here pretty soon to talk a little bit more about the preseason.
Yeah, you know, I'd love to do so. I mean, the thing is, by week two or three of preseason, you're going to see a whole bunch of, like, guys emerge, you know. And a lot of other, like, undrafted free agents that, you know, could actually end up making teams and starting this year. Because the 2018 draft was pretty intriguing, you know. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining us. Again, thanks to Peter for talking to us about fantasy wide receivers. That was a ton of fun. Thanks again, Yusei, for the help kind of covering some training camp battles. We will be back. This will be up tonight, Tuesday night. We are getting kind of back on schedule here. We will have a show up for you guys on Thursday, and then another show on Friday. And then we'll kind of start determining how our divisional previews start coming out. The first one should be out next, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday, right after the Hall of Fame game. So thanks a lot, guys. It's been a great episode. Hope to see you next time. Thanks for your time. Peace out. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.